What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of MIAA Weekly. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAAweekly. Very excited to be with you this week as we take a break from staring at maps of Pennsylvania and Georgia to talk a little MIAA football. A couple of games last week, obviously the unofficial MIAA opener between Nebraska Kearney and Pittsburgh State. Obviously the Lopers coming out on top in that one, 31-26. In addition to Missouri Western heading down to Conway, Arkansas last week for a Division I exhibition against Central Arkansas, and a game that started off very strong for the Griffins but did not end up quite so hot. In segment two today, I'll be joined by Joplin Globe sports writer Jared Porter as he was inside Kearney Smith Stadium on Saturday in Pittsburgh for that UNK-Pitt State game to get his perspective on both the Gorillas and the Lopers in their season opener. And we'll close out the show, obviously, later on in segment two by previewing this week's games as Missouri Western will have their home opener hosting the aforementioned Pittsburgh State Gorillas. And Nebraska Kearney gets to play non-conference football as their home opener will be on Saturday afternoon as they take on in-state rival Chadron State. So we'll take a little bit of a peek and give you, in particular, that UNK Chadron State game, give you a little bit of a kind of a game notes, what to watch for CSU. But we start with my takeaways from last week's game, starting with Nebraska Kearney taking on and beating Pittsburgh State in Pittsburgh. And we're going to start on the Pittsburgh State side. This has been a very weird year for the Gorillas. Obviously, anytime a program brings in a new leader, a new coach, to try to bring, in Pitt State's case in particular, to try to bring them back to the level of prominence that they feel that their administration, their boosters, their athletics department, their alumni feel that they should be at as the Pitt State Gorillas, there's always going to be kind of a feeling out period. Usually, a very, very large portion of that period takes place over the course of spring ball. Pittsburgh State had two spring practices before everything got shut down because of coronavirus. That means that from the second week of March until late this summer, Coach Wright did not see his team on the field once. And vice versa. The team did not get a chance to work on the field with Coach Wright and his staff until late this summer, when they weren't sure if they were preparing for games or if they were really just getting acquainted for a year. And then you throw the added wrench into the machinery, so to speak, that they find out a couple weeks into those summer workouts that they actually are going to play some games, as obviously Pitt State joined that scheduling alliance that we talked about a few weeks ago with UNK and Missouri Western. So to go from hiring a new coach, learning a new system, learning guys' names, really. I mean, Coach Wright probably didn't even know all of the names of his quarterbacks in his quarterback's room all the way when all of a sudden the word came down that everyone had to stay at least 6 feet away and stop talking. Or stop practicing, I should say. So, with all that being said, actually, let me go back. And then on top of that, you go into this game against Nebraska Kearney. There's a ton of buzz, but it doesn't really show. And Jared Porter is going to talk more about this in segment two, because ordinarily Pitt State is quite possibly the best game day experience in the MIAA. And this is, again, I try to be as non-biased as I can when I host this show, but this is coming from a Missouri Southern graduate. I'll admit it. Pitt State's game day atmosphere under normal circumstances is incredible. The parking lot is packed. People are tailgating. There's live music. They have the little, I don't remember what it's called, so I mean no offense if I get it wrong, but the little gorilla march that they do where they come from the field house to the field, and it's like a miniature parade with the team. Like, it's really, really cool to spend a game day Saturday in Pittsburgh. It's a really cool atmosphere. We didn't have that. The buzz was there, but the atmosphere wasn't. And then, so you to kind of put another pancake onto the pile, so to speak, they find out, or we find out, that because of testing protocols and quarantining and COVID, the Gorillas start off the season with 9 players and 2 coaches in quarantine. And so as a result of that, you're missing experienced starters on offense, on the offensive line, at receiver. You're missing a running back who has previously been an all-conference running back. On defense, you're missing a couple starters on defense that are in quarantine. And then obviously, I don't know which coaches they were, but obviously there's 2 coaches that are now not going to be on the sideline. And despite all that, the Gorillas come out, and on offense in particular, they show a lot of promise. So, we'll start there. So on the Gorillas' first drive, they get the touchdown. Everything looks good. I mean, the offense is very, very different. I don't think that anybody who is watching, I mean, I'm sure a lot of Pitt State fans are listening to this right now. They're saying, well, duh. But for everybody else that maybe didn't get a chance to watch the game, Pitt State has one offensive identity. They are a spread team. They have athletes because they are Pitt State and they can recruit. They spread those athletes out. And even with depleted receiving core and an inexperienced offensive line, they were able to find mismatches against a pretty strong returning Nebraska Kearney defense. Offensively, at wide receiver, redshirt freshman Dylan White and Christian Carter both had over 100 yards. They both had kind of coming out parties, so to speak, where both of them had long touchdowns. Both of them, like I said, had over 100 yards. And both of them looked like legitimate MIAA weapons as freshmen. And that's noteworthy because, one, the Gorillas were without Bryce Murphy, who was their leading returning receiver from last year. And two, in addition to those guys, they also have a kid named Jalen Martin, who transferred into Pitt State from Iowa State. And he didn't surpass 100 yards, but he also looked really good in the passing game. Max Sexton, in his first game in the system, there was some inefficiencies. There were some throws that he missed and things like that. But this is a sophomore quarterback. He throws for almost 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. Last season, Max Sexton showed that he could make throws and put his team in a position to win games. In his first college game last year, Max Sexton led the game-winning drive against UCO in week 1. And he had to do it throwing the ball and moving the team down the field that way. So we know what kind of a quarterback Max Sexton could be. However, for basically all of last season, he was splitting time with another quarterback because the previous coaching staff had this idea that they wanted to throw off defenses by coming into every game with 2 different offensive schemes. It worked. I'm not sitting here, I'm not going to bash that. It worked. They scored a ton of points last year. But for Max Sexton in particular, this kind of system and seemingly having the confidence of his coach to say, this is going to be your offense until you show me that it needs to be somebody else's, I think Max Sexton has a chance to really, really thrive under Coach Wright. And keep in mind, Sexton is only a sophomore. So the Pitt State offense has a chance, and this is to say nothing of the fact that, as I mentioned before, a bunch of young guys on the offensive line, a bunch of inexperienced guys on the offensive line, missing one of their top running backs. They also ran for over 130 yards on the day and averaged nearly 5 yards a carry. So all in all, just the offense in general for Pitt State, there's a ton to be excited about if you're a Pitt State fan. They left some opportunities on the field on Saturday. They did only score 26 points, but there were a couple of times that Coach Wright, and I respect this, in a season like this especially, he rolled the dice a couple of times where they were down inside UNK territory, and instead of going for a field goal, they went for it on fourth down. And a couple of times that didn't work out for him. I think that there were, three times, if memory serves, that they had a turnover on downs inside UNK territory. So it didn't always work out for him, but I respected the fact that Coach Wright's trying to see what he's got, and so he's not going to take reps away from his offense in high-leverage situations. And so when you consider those things, and you consider the fact that they did still get into the end zone four times, and that they were depleted as far as their experienced players on that side of the ball, I think that if you're a Pitt State fan, you have to come away from that game very encouraged. And, you know, just kind of a sneak peek, and we'll talk about this more in segment two, going into week two, I think that's one of the bigger stories to kind of keep an eye on is, one, I don't know the details of which players were in direct contact or contact with somebody who tested positive. I don't know who tested positive. So I don't know what the possibility is of getting some of the experienced guys back. But from week one to week two, I'm very curious to see how some of these young guys progress offensively under Coach Wright's new system. And UNK has a good defense. It's a solid defense. I would say that I don't think it's being unfair to say they don't have a ton of star power on that defense, but they're just a very solid all-around defense. I think Missouri Western at the Division II level has some star power on their defense. I think they have a chance, Missouri Western has a chance to be one of the better defenses in the MIAA. So it's going to be a really, really fun measuring stick to see this Saturday how the offense measures up when they head up to St. Joe. On the flip side, I think the biggest takeaway from the Nebraska Kearney perspective is that even though last year TJ Davis won the MIAA Freshman of the Year, I think that we saw that we are still just scratching the surface of how good Davis can be before he leaves. Again, he was Freshman of the Year last year, so simple math tells you he's playing in his sophomore year this year. So there's at least two more seasons after this. And remember, the NCAA is allowing athletes to play this year without losing eligibility. So if he wants to come back next year and say that next year is a sophomore season, he's within his right to do that. We don't know if that's going to happen. I've not spoken to him, but he's within his right to do that if he wants to. So we might have three more years after this of TJ Davis. His legs make him a constant threat in the running game. Every time he escaped the pocket and broke contain, he punished Pittsburgh State. Obviously, the rushing attack for UNK is incredible. They were the number three rated rushing attack in all of Division II football last year. They ended up with, I want to get the number right, 287 yards on the ground on Saturday against Pitt State. And that's honestly, that's down from what they normally did last year. Last year, they averaged something like 340 a game. Pittsburgh State held them under 300. So Dayton Seeley is a man at running back. He's like 6'1", 220 pounds, but he moves like a small guy. He's able to run around you or through you. Nebraska Kearney is a team. I don't think it can be overstated how great a job Coach Lynn has done in Nebraska. And I think that with the kind of option system that they run in Kearney, having a quarterback like TJ Davis really goes a long way to unlocking the potential of just how good this offense can be. You know, remember, before TJ Davis took over as the starter last year, Coach Lynn was running this system and having success with it with a quarterback who had never been in a running system before. It was a quarterback who was used to throwing the ball a lot and was used to being the shotgun, wasn't used to this kind of triple option look. But Coach Lynn coached him up, and he was able to run it well. I don't want to say adequately, because that's not fair to the kid. McInnes was the quarterback. He ran it well. But TJ Davis is the kind of quarterback that can turn this kind of offense into a nightmare for opposing defenses. And I think that on Saturday against Pitt State, and perhaps it's because of the fact that it's the first weekend that he's been playing in the MIAA, and frankly, I mean, these will be the only weekends this season where he's not sharing the spotlight. And there were a lot more people, I think, watching that broadcast who were not necessarily Nebraska, Kearney, or Pitt State fans than there otherwise might have been. And people took notice of TJ Davis. So I'm very curious to see what his progression looks like this year. He's got an arm. He can sling it, but he's very inconsistent. He was able to hit some receivers deep on just big chunk plays, because when you run for almost 300 yards a game, eventually defenses sell out against the run. When he's able to make throws into coverage, when he's able to throw guys open, when he's able to read defenses a little bit better, I really think that Nebraska Kearney could be on the verge of making a serious jump, even more so than what we've seen over the last few years. You are listening to the MIAA Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAAweekly. The other game on Saturday was Missouri Western traveling down to Conway, Arkansas to take on Division I UCA, Central Arkansas. So similar to Pitt State, Missouri Western had some really, really bad luck going into that game in Arkansas last week. Three of their five defensive coaches, including their defensive coordinator, had to quarantine because of COVID-19. And so Coach Williamson was literally calling his buddies from around the state of Arkansas, who he knew just over the course of his career, especially his time on the staff at Central Arkansas. And they were filling in for Missouri Western coaches. They were also without a handful of impact players. Namely, their leading returning rusher, Shamar Griffith, did not play. Arguably their best defensive player in Arnold Creighton, a defensive end, did not suit up. Despite that, for about 10 minutes of game time, Western traded punches with UCA and looked like they could hang. And then it kind of went bad after that. Trey Vavil introduced himself to an ESPN audience, people watching on ESPN3, by opening the game with a 66-yard kickoff return. After UCA decided that, you know, how good could a Division II All-American really be? Well, he showed them on the first play of the game. And then after that, a depleted offensive line plowed the way for Jared Scott to punch it in to give Missouri Western an early 7-0 lead. After that, it didn't really go so well for the Griffins, and I think that anybody who followed that game knows that, so I'm not going to spend too much time rehashing what was what ended up being kind of a long afternoon for the Griffins down in Arkansas. But the big takeaway for me for Missouri Western, there were a couple of them. One, the kind of experience that, frankly, some of the second string players got in this game because of the bad luck that Missouri Western had with COVID protocols is invaluable. And we talk about this, you know, going back to the conversation about whether or not they should play non-conference football in this league. And there are not going to be other schools, aside from these three MIAA schools we're talking about today, that have this opportunity. Missouri Southern is not going out there and showing their kids a higher level of competition in an off week. They're not testing their freshmen and sophomores against Division I talent. And that's something that, in particular, Missouri Western and Pitt State are doing, because they both got Division I FCS teams on the schedule this year. And for Williamson and his staff, I mean, they think that Missouri Western is a team, or is a program, that they can build up to being a perennial playoff team and a team that eventually works their way into the national championship conversation. And games like this, even though the final score and the final stat line was ugly, and it was ugly, these are the kind of lumps that you take along that road to building yourself, to hardening yourself into that kind of a football team. The other takeaway I had is that even though his overall numbers were not very impressive, I liked what I saw from Anthony Vespo. It was his first start of the season after acting as the backup last year behind Wyatt Stegerwald. And he only threw for 143 yards. He obviously did not throw any touchdown passes. But he had a couple of drives where he was standing in, staring down pressure, and either waiting for receivers to get into the right window. He was throwing guys open. He made a couple of throws into coverage that showed kind of an impressive arm strength and a sort of moxie that you like to see out of your quarterback. I really, really liked what I saw at Anthony Vespo. And at times, I really liked some of the play that I saw out of the wide receivers, in particular, Cooper Burton. Cooper Burton is only a sophomore this year. He's a local kid from there in St. Joe, and he was a go-to player last year, and he looks, it's a small sample size, but he looks like he's already taken another step forward, and he might be a kid, and we're going to keep an eye on him, obviously, as the year goes on, but he might be one of those guys that works his way into that conversation of, this is one of the best receivers in this league. So those are the two biggest things that I take away from the Missouri Western performance down in Central Arkansas. Obviously, the game did not go the way that they hoped. Obviously, they had some really bad luck with COVID protocol. You know, it's one thing to not have some players, and they were some impactful players, as I talked about. You know, I just gave two examples. There were a handful that were gone. But then also to be missing half of your staff, effectively, or your defensive staff, and having a lot of young guys filling in, getting their instruction from an unfamiliar voice, while, you know, and hoping that that unfamiliar voice is on the same page with the head coach, who's also acting as the defensive coordinator, which is not a thing he normally does. It was just a very weird situation for the Griffins. Obviously, Williamson's not the kind of guy to make excuses. But just, you know, it was unfortunate to see that Western had to kind of deal with that kind of adversity. And it's kind of a perfect illustration for what kind of a year 2020 has been with the pandemic and everything else, and kind of the Murphy's Law of it all, with everything that can go wrong kind of going wrong. But Western is a team that has a lot of talent. They were a team that I kind of had as a sleeper if this had been a normal season. As a team that I would have liked probably to make a playoff, have a playoff appearance. But I'll be curious to see how they respond this weekend against Pittsburgh State. You are listening to the MIAA Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at miwaweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at miwaweekly. We are going to take a quick break as we wrap up segment one. When we come back on the other side of that break, we will be joined by a sports reporter from the Joplin Globe, Jared Porter, as he was inside Kearney Smith Stadium on Saturday to get his impression on the Pittsburgh State Gorillas and the Nebraska Kearney Lopers in week one. Keep it locked right here. We'll be back in about 60 seconds. This is the MIAA Weekly Podcast. Joining us now on MIAA Weekly, he is a sports writer at the Joplin Globe, and he was inside the stadium last week for Pitt State versus Nebraska Kearney in the first MIAA football game of the season. Jared Porter. Jared, thanks a lot for giving me some time today, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. First off, I know how much work and time goes into covering or having an entire conference as your beat. So sure do respect what you do, and I'm glad to talk some football with you.
I appreciate it, man. I just don't miss having a deadline like you do. So yeah, let's jump into it. You know, last week, obviously, like I said, you were there in the capacity of covering Pitt State, but you got a front row seat of the first game of the year in the MIAA. Let's kind of start with that. Around the Joplin / Pittsburgh, Kansas area, what was the buzz like knowing that there was actually a football game to look forward to on Halloween?
Well, right. It was a little bit of a strange situation because we didn't know for a long time if we would even have football at the D2 level in general or just in the MIAA. But typical stadium atmosphere, it really wasn't, because you get up there and you're used to seeing people tailgating, a bunch of college kids out and about, a lot more people than were actually there. And plus, with the limitations of the stadium capacity, I think they had it at 25%. It just didn't feel like a typical Pittsburgh State game. I'd covered a few last season, and I think one maybe the year before, and each one of those were there was a lot more electricity in the air, so you could definitely tell a difference. But when I was talking to the players afterward, I asked if it was noticeable for them, and they kind of expressed the same feeling that, yeah, it was noticeable in the beginning, but once you start playing football and the pads start hitting each other, that all goes away.
So kind of turning our attention to the game on the field, you know, Pittsburgh State, this was a very highly anticipated day for them, especially for their fans. Sure. With the first game for Coach Wright and his new staff and a lot of new faces at Pitt State as well. So just overall, what were your first impressions of what Pitt State looked like under Coach Wright this year versus what it was like last year with Coach Beck, as far as just on the field?
I think I left the stadium feeling a little bit more positive about Pittsburgh State's performance than what most Pitt State fans may have felt. And I saw good things offensively, specifically with that new system that Wright has brought in. Of course, you have to take this year into consideration. It's been a strange year. I assume it's been a very strange offseason, especially for a program that, A, is returning, I think, 8 total starters from last season, and they're bringing in a new coach and a new coaching staff, as you just said. But offensively, I thought we saw a lot of positive things from the quarterback, Max Sexton, as well as some of the receivers, the young receivers specifically, that were able to see some action on Saturday.
You know, you talk about that offense, and, you know, a lot was made before that game or during pregame about the fact that because of COVID, there were going to be some players that were not on the field because they were being quarantined. Right. I was looking at the depth charts and the game participation tab on the box score. On the offensive line, Pitt State started one returning starter in Zach Thomas. And then they had one sophomore in Michael Toney from Northwest Arkansas. Shout out, my neck of the woods. And then 3 freshmen starting on the offensive line. 0 sacks given up by the offensive line. Can you speak to how well that young group, obviously with the exception of Thomas, who's probably an all-conference caliber guard there on that line, but aside from him, an insanely inexperienced offensive line, and they held up very well against a really talented defense.
Well, yeah, you just kind of touched on this, but getting through a shortened season and having to deal with the struggles of COVID, I think you're going to run into this problem a lot moving forward. A depleted offensive line, but still they give up zero sacks. And I think the offense, how many yards did they total? Is well over 400.
It was 530 yards of total offense for Pitt State.
Yeah, 530. That's a considerable amount. I had no concerns about the offense. If anything, Pitt State fans could have left that game feeling a little bit disappointed in the showing from defensively. But we'll talk about that, sure, I'm sure, later. But, yeah, that offensive line giving up zero sacks, and especially for the pass-heavy offense that Wright is trying to implement into that offensive scheme, allowing your quarterback to have enough time to get the ball out and pass for nearly 400 yards and three touchdowns, that was really key.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, and we talk about how they were depleted on the offensive line, but it wasn't just there. 400 yards to the air, you mentioned. No Bryce Murphy, team's leading receiver, coming back from last year. 132 yards on the ground, very respectable, averaged almost 5 yards a carry. No Tucker Horak in the backfield. That's a returning all-conference running back. So the depth and talent on the skill positions for Pitt State, at least for me watching, was really exciting. And a thing that, especially an offensive-minded coach like Coach Wright, this offense could be a lot of fun to watch by the end of this shortened season.
Yeah, and the biggest takeaway for me offensively for Pitt State was their young core of receivers. We saw enough of Max Sexton last year to know that, you know, he was probably going to thrive in the system. He had an okay day, 25 of 46 passing. But those young receivers, Christian Carter, Jalen Martin. Jalen, I think, is a transfer. But Dylan White, he's a freshman out of Pittsburgh High School. Those guys all had great games, two of them. Dylan White and Christian Carter had over 100 yards receiving, as well as one touchdown. And I believe Jalen also had one touchdown, but I don't know if he crossed the 100-yard receiving mark.
He did not. He was like 60 yards.
Yeah, we saw a lot of good things from that young core of receivers, and that certainly bodes well for the future. And I think that that's one of the things that Wright could build on moving forward, especially in that system that he's implementing.
So let's flip sides of the ball to that defense, as we're joined now by the sports reporter from the Joplin Globe, Jared Porter, as he talks about Pitt State versus Nebraska Kearney last Saturday inside Kearney Smith Stadium. And defensively, you know, there was a Pittsburgh State fan who pointed out to me on social media after the game, I made a comment, kind of like we've been talking about here, that the offense was really exciting, and I was very excited to see kind of how that offense progressed at Pitt State under Coach Wright. And a Pitt State fan actually responded to me on Twitter and was quick to point out, and rightly so, that the problem for Pitt State recently has not been scoring points. It's been on the other side of the ball. Now, it's a tough ask with, you know, a depleted lineup, a lot of guys stepping in to their first starts, some young guys playing on the defense side of the ball, in a, again, a shortened offseason, and your first assignment is arguably the best rushing attack in all of Division II football. But all told, how do you think defensively they looked? What are some things they can build on, and where do they need to improve?
Well, I think it really was a frustrating day defensively for the Gorillas, just because they really struggled to stop the run, especially with that speedy quarterback that Kearney had, TJ Davis. I think he's just a sophomore. That kid is going to be really good in the future, if not by the end of this season. I think that if he can develop somewhat of a pass threat in his game, then that's going to open up a lot of things for that Kearney offense. But as one dimensional as Kearney was, Pitt State still struggled to stop Kearney at times, and well, I say at times, for most of the first half and a lot of the early portion of the second half. It wasn't seemingly until the latter stages of the second half that Pitt State seemed to buckle in and figure out that, hey, we got to contain this quarterback. We can't let that run game gash us for 20 plus yards on a carry, that sort of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of things that obviously need to improve. I think it starts at the line of attack. The defensive line for Pittsburgh State have to get a little bit more of a push up front and try to stop that game and that run game and contain it as much as you can.
Let's flip sides now from Pitt State. Obviously, you were there to cover Pitt State, but you, I mean, among media members and people just in general, you're one of only a handful of people that got a front row seat to this Nebraska Kearney team. And I want to get your thoughts on them. Mm-hmm. This is a team that under Coach Lynn has seen steady improvement. They've had a 2-win improvement every year for the last 3 years. Last year, they won a bowl game convincingly against Winona State. I mentioned the fact that they, I want to say they ranked number 3 in the nation last year, rushing the football. What was your impression of the Lopers?
TJ Davis is, I just touched on this earlier, but he is going to be something special. He can make plays with his feet like no other. Even that Dayton Sealy, I think, was their starting running back. He had over 100 yards, no touchdowns. But TJ Davis had 4 touchdowns and just under 100 yards on 21 carries. But, yeah, he made several plays with his legs throughout the day, and it seemed like they were timely plays, big first downs late in the game whenever Kearney needed it. And even though I said that he needs to add a pass threat to his game to open some things up for Kearney, he did complete 5 of 10 attempts for 154 yards, which is kind of crazy. That's I don't know what that average is, but it's quite a
bit.
It, yeah, and I think that whenever Pitt State felt like they had to sell out on the run, that's when TJ has a strong arm, just not as accurate, and I'd say his decision-making in the pass game isn't where it needs to be. But whenever the Gorillas would settle out on the run, he was able to throw a couple balls deep and make some connections that really gashed Pittsburgh State for some long yardage plays.
Defensively, the Lopers had to replace a couple of all-conference caliber defensive linemen and their most productive linebacker in school history in Sal Silvio. What did you think about the defense for the Lopers coming into this? Obviously, Pitt State had a nice day on offense, but the Lopers held them under 27 points.
Yeah, there was a moment where Pittsburgh State offensively had that lull, I think, in the middle of the game. That was when I think Kearney went on a 17-0 run, and it seemed like, at least for a bit of the game, Pittsburgh State was kind of stymied, didn't know what to do. There were several quick three and outs. Yeah, I don't know too much about them defensively. They did just enough to get that win, which is the important thing. And they had that last stand at the end of the game whenever Pittsburgh State was making that late comeback. And by the way, that defense really, especially in the secondary for Kearney, it really ramped up its pressure on the receivers whenever they forced 4 straight incompletions, of course, to end the game.
Yeah, the end of that game is obviously really crazy. You know, with a weird decision by Kearney to run the ball instead of kneeling it, leading to a fumble and kind of giving Pitt State life late in that contest. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, you know, as we look back at Pitt State, what do you think will be the thing that they will look to improve the most heading into their game this weekend against Missouri Western?
Obviously the defensive side of the ball, but here's the thing. I think, and Coach Wright kind of touched on this in the press conference earlier in the week, last week, you have to approach the season differently just because it's a shortened season. Of course, there's not going to be an MIAA championship on the line. There's not going to be postseason play on the line. So you can think of these 5 games, obviously, as exhibitions. Unless I'm wrong, I think that every D2 player has the ability to come back and get another year of eligibility next season. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so wins and losses aren't really that important this year. And I think that Coach Wright feels the same way. It's a good opportunity for extra practice, getting guys on the field, guys that maybe not have as much time on the field if it were a different season, get some more legs out there, see what you have, and it might be even a blessing in disguise for a Pittsburgh State team that's replacing its head coach and has such a high turnover rate from last season.
He is Jared Porter. He is a sports writer for the Joplin Globe. And as we get into a more regular looking schedule of MIAA sports, I'm sure I'll be talking to him a lot more about Pittsburgh State and also Missouri Southern right there in Joplin. Jared, thanks a lot for giving me some time today, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jesse. I really had fun. Thanks for having me on.
You are listening to the MIAA Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAA Weekly. Once again, that was the sports writer from the Joplin Globe, Jared Porter, joining us to talk about Pittsburgh State and Nebraska Kearney football. As we shift our attention now to the future, as this Saturday, 2 football games on the docket featuring MIAA teams. The first being the Nebraska Kearney Lopers playing host to non-conference opponent Chadron State. The first time in a long time that we've been able to say anything about an MIAA team hosting a non-conference opponent. Chadron State comes into the game with a record of 2-1. Their one loss coming back on October 10th on the road in Grand Junction, Colorado. They lost 10-7 in a little bit of a slugfest against Colorado Mesa. Since then, they have come back and won two games, one at home and one on the road against South Dakota Mines. South Dakota Mines, the other non-conference team that Nebraska Kearney will play later on this fall. So Chadron State defensively is a team that gives up just about 5 yards a carry to their opponents. That's not bad. The problem that you're going to run into if you are Chadron State is that if you give up 5 yards a carry to not Nebraska Kearney, then against Nebraska Kearney, against the run, you're probably going to have a bad time. Once again, the Lopers coming into this season returned what was the third best rushing attack in all of Division II college football, led by that star quarterback, TJ Davis. However, offensively, Chadron said they have a star quarterback of their own in Dalton Holst. He comes into the game averaging about 258 yards a game through the air. He has thrown 4 touchdowns in the 3 games. However, for his career, Holst, who is a senior, has completed 674 passes for more than 8,800 yards. And he's topped 73 touchdowns. He is seemingly one of the better quarterbacks that Chadron State, which is a very solid program in Division II, one of the better quarterbacks that they have had in their program's history. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I've watched film on this team. But going into Saturday's game, I think that the two biggest things to watch are going to be, one, how can Chadron State control Nebraska Kearney's run game? And two, Nebraska Kearney just gave up almost 400 yards through the air against a very young, very inexperienced Pittsburgh State team that was playing its first game under a new coach in a new system. So,